Welcome to None of This Is Real,
the podcast for all things mysterious and weird.
I'm Doomsday Damini.
And I'm Sarah Sinkhole.
And you seem to have become an old lady.
I'm an old, tired woman. This is
another one of those looks where I'm trying to make my outsides match my insides. I feel old and tired. I feel aged and tired.
But you're still rocking the look. Like, you still have pearls on.
Oh, thank you.
And a floral print.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I'm also wearing a pair of glasses. I bought 3 pair of glasses from, I think it was Zenni. They were all like $7. I was like, I'll get 3. I can afford that.
Yeah.
And I've never worn these because I was like, they kind of squeeze my head. They're not that cool. And then when I put them on, Lorenzo was like, I'm pretty sure my mom has those glasses. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to wear them.
But now they're...
No offense.
They're just not your style, but they're Granny's style.
No.
Granny Sinkhole.
Granny, gosh, call me Granny Sinkhole.
I'll tell the people about your wig, please.
Oh, okay. So it's the same wig that I wore when I was the church lady, whatever the hell that was, because time is meaningless
at this point. 1,000 years ago.
1,000 years ago.
But I've turned it around backwards, you see.
You see, so it's different. It's a different wig now.
It's a very versatile wig.
It's a metaphor about how we're all turned around backwards right now.
Sure. Why not? I should have been wearing this wig backwards from the day I was born, if that's the case.
Right.
When have we never not been backwards? Listen, if we sound like frantic or depressed or somewhere in between for this whole episode, just know that we're both overwhelmed and tired.
And so, you
sorry.
Probably are too. We probably all are.
Yes, but let this be a respite.
Yes. Come respite with us.
Yes, this is self-care. No, probably not.
Weird things are self-care. Oh, I was going to say, I have the pair of glasses that I'm wearing right now is from one of those places where you can get inexpensive glasses, and I love them. Because
yes,
you can get wacky styles and not have to be so concerned that you're not going to wear them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fashion.
Good. Fashion.
For the win.
Turn to the left. Fashion.
Y'all.
Keep turning to the left.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, what's up?
Has anything weird or mysterious happened to you lately?
Oh, my. Oh, me. Oh, my.
Oh, you.
Oh, me. Let's see. I was outside playing with my son the other day, and we were pretending to be hunting creatures from SCP. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-mm, I don't.
I can't remember what the S stands for now. Something containment. It's kind of like it's a website that is a record of all of these anomalies and creatures that a government agency is keeping contained.
Nice.
And some of them are very scary, and some of them are quite humorous. But there's lots of them. I went down that rabbit hole years ago when I first got on the internet. Levon has recently discovered SCPs, and he loves them because he loves all things cryptic and weird, just like me. And so we were outside playing. We were hunting this specific SCP, and I think it's 096. I think it's called Shy Guy. I get confused with the numbers, but it's 096. And we were walking around, and we were hiding behind a shrubbery from the creature. And I looked down, and there was this little grayish-white ball under the shrub. And I was like, you know me, ooh, shiny thing, a thing, a found object. I got to pick it up. And I picked it up, and then it was a bingo ball. And it had 069 on it.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, Levon, look at this. And he's like, oh, my God, it's a 096. Oh, my God.
It's sending you a message.
Yeah, even though in my mind I was going, oh, 69, because yeah. I'm a dirty, dirty grown-up.
You're
and luckily, that's
bird.
One dirty bird thing my son hasn't learned yet, because he's full of foul language and body part talk these days.
No.
But he doesn't know that one yet, so I'm going to keep that one.
Yeah, keep it for yourself.
Far away and as long as possible.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, that was pretty weird and also fun and exciting.
That is fun.
What weird thing are you going to tell me about?
Okay. Well, I already told you, but I need to tell the turkey buzzards that it finally happened to me. I finally had a bathroom dream. So,
oh my gosh, this is so exciting for me.
So, yeah, you've had all these bathroom dreams. Another friend of mine has had some bathroom dreams that she's told me about. And I finally had
We've had listeners write in, remember?
Yes, bathroom dreams. What?
Have we read that email yet?
I think so. I'm pretty sure we have.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We did.
So, yeah, it was like a bunch of showers in a big room, and I found some metaphors in it for myself. It was very enlightening. I'm so happy that I've had a bathroom dream.
I feel like bathroom dreams are enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they are probably, if you're trying to use the toilet, it is probably just your body going, no, don't pee the bed.
Go to the toilet now.
Wake up and go to the bathroom.
Yes, that too. No, these are showers, and I was thinking that bathroom dreams are showing you a place where you're vulnerable, because you're always a little bit vulnerable when you're using the bathroom, if you're showering or if you're
on the toilet. Oh my God, yes.
So
you're naked or your pants are down or mm-hmm. you're in the act of doing something that it's probably a bad idea if you stand up while you're doing it.
Oh, mental images.
Gross.
Okay.
So sorry.
Anyway, that's my weird thing. And this week, shall I just tell everybody what we're doing this week? Is there anything else?
I forgot to talk about this last week. I did receive a beautiful piece of art for Christmas from our theme song writer, Michaela De Leon.
Ooh.
And it has a turkey buzzard on it. I'm going to take a picture and I'll post it.
Oh my gosh.
On the Instagram. It's gorgeous.
I can't wait
to
see it.
And I was so excited. You're going to love
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
So that's an exciting update, and I will post a picture. And thank you, Michaela, for just literally everything, for just existing.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on this earth plane.
In the now moment.
In the
All right.
now moment. We're going to talk about musical curses.
Ooh.
Sometimes music isn't all that relaxing or soothing. Sometimes it can kill you.
Oh, bum, bum, bum.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the curse of the ninth, as in the ninth symphony. So I'll tell you my sources. The Curse of the Ninth Haunted These Composers by James Bennett II. WFMT.com, Composers and the Curse of the Ninth Symphony by Peter Lefebvre. And, as always, forever and ever,
Wikipedia.
That came from outer space.
Mine came from my impression of an old lady singing at church that I do sometimes.
Perfect.
So
you're so on brand today. So
I am always.
The Curse of the Ninth is a superstition connected with the history of classical music, and it is the belief that the Ninth Symphony will be a composer's last. So basically, once the composer writes their Ninth Symphony, or while they are writing it, they'll die. You'll never get to the 10th.
Uh-oh.
So.
Uh-oh. That's people, not good. Stop at your 8th.
People who believe.
Or what if you just name them differently?
Well, we'll get to
this
that.
This is 8.5.
I'm going to talk about that.
Oh, cool. I'm excited.
It's a thing. It's happened. So people who believe in this curse think that a composer who produces a ninth symphony has reached a decisive landmark, and that to embark on the 10th is to challenge fate. So it's kind of like in, if you've ever seen Final Destination, where they cheat death.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a bit like that, but for classical music.
Look, we get it. You're really good at composing. We don't need a ninth symphony. 8 is enough.
8 is enough. Oh, God. Okay.
Oh, no. Okay.
So Arnold Schoenberg, the composer, had this to say about the significance of the number 9 when it comes to symphonies. This is a quote. It seems that the ninth is a limit. He who wants to go beyond it must pass away. It seems as if something might be imparted to us in the 10th, which we ought not yet know, for which we are not ready. Those who have written a ninth stood too close to the hereafter.
Oh my.
Spooky.
That's just so dramatic.
I know. I love it. Okay.
Wow.
So I'm going to tell you about some composers who experienced the wrath of this curse. They stood too close to the hereafter.
Back away.
Back away from the hereafter. It's dangerous.
Get back. I'm good for a while. Thank you.
Beethoven. He was the first one. So this is his groundbreaking choral symphony, his ninth symphony. And it also proved to be his last. His ninth symphony is a massive work. It takes over an hour to perform. And a few years after the premiere, he passed away. He was unable to finish what he was working on, which was believed to be a highly anticipated 10th symphony.
Makes sense.
So there were a lot of composers who followed after him, obviously, but there were some who followed after him in the practice of dying after their ninth symphonies, not just musically. Oh my God. Anton Bruckner was a composer from Austria who, he got a lot of criticism in his day, and one of the problems that critics talked about was his habit of constantly revisiting and tinkering with his works. So even after they were finished, he would go back and he would mess with them because he was never satisfied, I guess.
I feel his pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very hard for me to be like, this is done.
Yep.
Walk away. Move on to the next thing.
I think that's hard for a lot of artists and writers and musicians, right?
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah.
So he was composing a ninth symphony, but it was unfinished when he died, partially because he kept backtracking and messing with the previous eight. So he wouldn't finish.
Oh, no.
And then fate was like, you took too long, buddy. I'm sorry you've got to go.
You took too long to get too close to the hereafter. Lay down.
Go take a nap. Okay. The next person is Antonin Dvorak. Dvorak's popular Ninth Symphony was actually billed as his fifth at the time of its premiere. So this is one example of calling it something else, right?
Okay.
It wasn't until four earlier symphonies were discovered after his death that the symphony he called New World was labeled as his ninth. So it was technically his ninth. People just didn't know.
Oh, so it doesn't matter if you have unknown symphonies or if you name them different things. It's still going to be the ninth. It's
still the ninth. The universe knows. The Grim Reaper is keeping count. Okay?
Yep. They got little tally marks on under every composer's name.
They're watching you. All right. I'm going to move on to Gustav Mahler. Mahler was the first to believe in the superstition surrounding the Ninth Symphony, so he developed...
We know that's not good.
...a possible unhealthy obsession with the curse. I guess any obsession with a curse would probably be unhealthy.
Right? I'm feeling like, yeah. Don't do that. Don't obsess over a curse.
After he completed his Eighth Symphony, Mahler came up with a clever plan to beat it. He was going to tempt fate, y'all.
Oh, my goodness.
He wrote a piece that I'm not going to butcher in German, but it translates to the Song of the Earth. And that was a symphony in everything but name. So he just refused to call it a symphony because it would have been his ninth. So he was like, ha, gotcha. Didn't name it a symphony. Didn't give it a number. Neener, neener, neener. But guess what? He died.
No. Oh, my God.
He died right after he started working on his 10th symphony.
What the hell?
The curse knows. Okay, and my last composer is Ralph Vaughan Williams. He had a super productive career. He wrote concertos, concertos, ballets, film music, choral music, the whole nine. Ha ha, get it? So, but he produced only nine symphonies. 3 weeks after the premiere of the ninth, he died suddenly. He was, however, 86 years old, so he was not super young or anything.
Right.
His friends and family still said it was a shock because he seemed absolutely normal the day before his death. They just didn't see it coming.
Gotcha.
It was that Ninth Symphony.
Every time.
Every single time it's going to get you. Except, here are some people who made it through. Skeptics say that this curse is due to errors in history, oversimplification, cultural blind spots, etc. So that
we never do that.
We don't do that. That's not a thing.
No. Uh-uh.
For everyone, every composer who has completed 9 symphonies and died, or died while completing a 9th symphony, there are plenty of composers who have completed more than that. So
makes sense.
There is a composer named Villa-Lobos who completed 11. Milhaud, I think I'm saying that right. Not sure. 12. He did 12. Dmitri Shostakovich completed 15 symphonies. So there are people who have completed more than 9 symphonies.
Obviously, yeah.
And I'm just going to end with one last little theory. And this is the theory that the composers who completed it went beyond the hereafter. And that was only because they were ready for it. So these are like extra enlightened composers who did cheat death.
Okay, so this is like an evolution instead of a...
Yeah.
Instead of death. Okay, interesting. Sure, why not?
Mm-hmm. Sure, why not? Well, hey, is any of that real?
I'm gonna go with no.
Really? I am shocked.
Can you believe it?
I can't believe you.
You are shooken.
Grandma.
I know. I look like I would believe damn near anything, don't I? Okay. I think this is similar to like the 27 Club.
Yeah, yeah.
Where
it's
like when you only look at the people it applies to, you're like, holy shit, that's crazy. Wow. But then you look at the rest of, you know, what was it? The 56 Club is what we.
Yeah,
what
the 56 Club.
Statistically. Yeah. So also, my other thing is it must take. There's got to be people out there who have written way more symphonies than that. Do they have to be good symphonies for you to qualify?
I don't know.
Is there like a critical element, you know? Like, you did write 15, but they weren't very good, so like you didn't make the cut.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Oh, those composers are going to write us a nasty email.
Oh, I'm so I am not judging. It's just a theory.
Well, I like the theory that they've gone beyond something, because if you've written that many symphonies, if you're on your 10th, man, you're probably getting really good at it. You probably are crossing some sort of a talent threshold and like moving on to the next level.
Sure. That would be the preferable answer.
Right. So just be very careful out there. If you're writing a 9th symphony, don't go anywhere. Don't do anything dangerous. Just watch yourself.
Don't try to name it something else, because we're gonna know.
Yeah, us personally, Sarah and I, are gonna know.
Ooh, yes. That's creepy. Sorry. I'm not watching you.
Well, what sort of musical curse are you going to tell me about? Because I need to watch my back here. I might compose a 9th symphony.
All right. Don't do that. You got a ways to go. You got to do 8 first.
Yeah, so. I'm working on it.
I feel like I know you well enough that you would have told me had you written 8 symphonies.
Probably.
Right? I would have heard them. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to talk about one song in particular that is supposed to be cursed.
Ooh.
And that is Gloomy Sunday, and I'm going to cite my sources. This song's a killer, The Strange Tale of Gloomy Sunday by Bill Demain. Gloomy Sunday, the Hungarian suicide song by Kimberly Lynn. Could this gloomy song really inspire a person to commit suicide by Lauren Davis? The True Meaning of Gloomy Sunday by Alice Morgan. And of course, and as always, per usual, forever,
Wake Up Pretty.
Wow, your mouth is doing this thing.
Yes, my mouth was definitely doing a thing.
Is there some sort of content warning?
Yes, I was just about to say, I should have put the trigger warning before I read the sources.
I figured.
But obviously, trigger warning. I'm going to talk a lot about suicide.
Okay.
So if you don't want to hear that, please don't listen. My feelings will not be hurt. Also, if you are feeling any sort of way or having some kind of thoughts, please reach out to someone you love or trust. Oh, you're not alone. And I'm going to real quick give you the suicide prevention hotline number. It's 1-800-273-8255. And I just want to say, everyone, you are worthy and important and good and loved.
Yes.
We love you.
Agreed. We love you.
Okay. Enough about that. Now let's get into it. So my first section is entitled Facts, Maybe. Because a lot of this is one source says this, the other one says that. But we do know that the original song, in Hungarian, it's called Sad Sunday, but we're going to call it Gloomy Sunday, was published in 1933 by a Hungarian pianist and composer named Rezso Serez. I think I'm saying that right. I'm sure there's a much more beautiful way to pronounce it. So this was a piano melody in C minor. So, you know, it's a minor chord. It's going to be sad. That's the whole vibe of the minor chords. And the original Hungarian lyrics were written by a poet named Laszlo Javor, J-A-V-O-R. I'm just going to call him Laszlo. Oh my God, my foot fell asleep and it's tingling like crazy. Oh my God, okay. So the original lyrics were a poem, I believe, written and then combined later with the music. And the poem was called The World is Ending. And it was about despair caused by war. And it was like a lament and a prayer about humanity's sins and atrocities. Like, what the hell are we doing? Still relevant today. Other accounts say that these lyrics that were about war were not written until World War II and not copyrighted until 1946. But so, like I said, I'm very confused because I don't know if Laszlo was supposed to have written the original lyrics or if Rezso wrote those, the composer. Mm-hmm. But either way, a second set of lyrics were later put to the song. And this is where the singer is talking about committing suicide after his lover dies. But that's only one interpretation. I'll get to that later. So this is because Laszlo's lover at the time, or object of his desire, was a dancer and or singer, multi-talented woman named Sylvia. And she was performing at a club in Budapest. I guess that's where they met. Some people say that they were engaged, but, you know, some people could say whatever they want. Either way, she did leave Laszlo heartbroken when somebody offered her a contract. In another country, she moved away, she traveled the world, and then she got married in Italy. Mm. And he was so, so sad. The song was first recorded in Hungarian by someone called Pál Kalmár in 1935. And then it was recorded in English by Hal Kemp in 36. And that time, Sam Lewis wrote new lyrics of the similar vein to the original. But, you know, translation is weird, so it probably didn't sound as good.
Right, exactly.
He did tweak it. There was another version written, but the one that's the most popular is by Sam Lewis. So it's said that Rezso, the composer, had a hard time finding anybody to publish the song because it was so dang melancholy. Everyone's like, no one's going to want to listen to this. It's so sad. One publisher supposedly said, "It is not that the song is sad. There is a sort of terrible, compelling despair about it. I don't think it would do anyone any good to hear a song like that."
So he said it's not sad, but there's a terrible, compelling despair. So
yeah, it's not. I don't know.
I'm getting mixed messages here.
Come on, publisher. Get it together. So there have been at least 79 covers of the song that I could find, maybe more. Different, you know, what do you call it? Arrangements and such.
Yeah.
Such as Lou Rawls, Sarah Vaughan, Sarah McLachlan, The Smithereens, Sinead O'Connor, Bjork, Elvis Costello, Ray Charles, and Anton LaVey.
What?
Yeah.
Nuts.
A lot of those just kind of maybe either sample part of the music or rearrange it or just use parts of the lyrics. So it's not necessarily the whole entire song. But still, I thought that was a very interesting group of people to put together. John Williams also arranged an instrumental version of it for the film Schindler's List.
Oh my God.
So you know it's fucking sad.
Heavy.
If it's making it into that kind of heavy movie. And I will say apologies to all these other artists, but the best version hands down, is and will forever be Billie Holiday's version.
Of course.
I don't care. And I am of the opinion that anything Billie sings, it's the best. I don't care. Sorry.
Yeah, it's true. It's probably true.
Oh, maybe there might be a few exceptions for Nina Simone. I don't know. We'll see. I'll get back to you when I figure it out. All right, so here is the lore. Some say that Billie Holiday was cursed after recording the song, but I have written here in my notes, fuck that. Because if you read anything at all about her, it is so obvious that her life had so many much more real and fucked up depressing things that were the what cursed her. So I'm not going to get into that.
It wasn't the song.
It wasn't the song. So the legend goes that Serez wrote the song about his girlfriend after she left him. He was heartbroken and depressed. He just poured all of that into this song. And when it was published, he attempted to reconcile with his ex, only to find that she had poisoned herself and had been found dead with a copy of the sheet music in her hand.
Oh my God.
Or that she left a note with only two words, Gloomy Sunday.
That's dark.
It's very dark. Some sources say it has been linked to over 100 suicides. Apparently, the second publisher who received the sheet music killed himself. In Vienna, a teenage girl drowned herself while clutching the sheet music. Several other bodies were found in the Danube holding the sheet music. A shopkeeper or shoemaker in Budapest named Joseph Keller left a note quoting the lyrics. A London woman, this is the one that I read this years ago in one of those weird books that I love so much with like crazy weird historical things. This one is the one that stuck with me. A London woman overdosed, and when they went into her apartment, the record was playing over and over again.
Oh, no, that's spooky.
Right? Isn't that... Ooh, I got chills. I don't like it. Blah, blah, blah. A bunch more sad stories. So at least 18 suicides in Hungary alone have been connected to the song, so they banned it.
Oh, my God.
They were like, no more. We can't be doing this. This is crazy. In the 30s, Time Magazine and the New York Times reported on suicides and attempted suicides in the United States connected to the song. It was banned on BBC until 2002, and some media outlets in the United States refused to play it at all also.
Until 2002?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
There's actually a song that used to be banned or illegal to play in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. It was called Poor Ellen Smith.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
was banned because, yeah, the man who wrote it was the man who killed Ellen Smith, and he wrote it in prison. And when people played it at bars, like when a band would play it, it would basically cause a riot. Everyone was like, what the hell? No.
Yeah.
Don't play this guy's song. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, it makes sense.
It does make sense. I get it. Sadly, to continue on with this horrible story I'm telling, Serez Rezo himself jumped from the window of his Budapest apartment building in 1968.
Oh my God.
So, right. Which was like decades after the song came out. So, but still, so you gotta lump everything in there when you're talking about curses. And here's a quote from him. I stand in the midst of this deadly success as an accused man. This fatal fame hurts me. I cried all of the disappointments of my heart into this song, and it seems that others with feelings like mine have found their own hurt in it.
Wow.
How awful, though. Like, how awful would you feel if you had written a song that then people were saying this about?
That would suck.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine.
Really bad.
Okay, so I have the original lyrics and the Sam Lewis version in my notes. Should I read them?
Sure. Why not?
Let's see. So the original Hungarian lyrics translate to, it was a gloomy Sunday with hundreds of white flowers. I was waiting for you, my darling, with divine prayers. It was that hopeful Sunday before noon that the chariot of my sadness returned without you. Ever since then, Sunday is always full of woe. Tears are my drink, and my nourishment is sorrow. This will be the last Sunday, my darling. Please come. There will be a priest, a casket, a wake, and a hearse cloth. There will be flowers waiting for you, even now, and a casket. Under the blooming trees, this journey will be my last, but my eyes will be open so I can see you one last time. Don't be afraid to look at me. I will bless you, even in death.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Whew.
Okay.
That is a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah. I'm going to have a hard time reading the Sam Lewis version without singing.
Oh, why don't you just sing it?
I promise I won't. You do not want me to sing this whole entire song. Okay. Just go listen to Billy do it.
I will.
I do a horrible, a horrible Billy impression, which I will not subject anyone to.
Except me later. I want to hear it off air.
I'll do it for you later. Okay. So these lyrics are so beautiful and good, and I just hear Billy every time, so it makes my heart happy, even though it is a very depressing song. Sunday is gloomy, my hours are slumberless. Dearest, the shadows I live with are numberless. Little white flowers will never awaken you, not where the black coach of sorrow has taken you. Angels have no thought of ever returning you. Would they be angry if I thought of joining you? Gloomy Sunday.
Oh, man.
I know. There's another another verse. Gloomy is Sunday, with shadows I spend it all. My heart and I have decided to end it all. Soon there will be candles and prayers that are sad, I know. Let them not weep. Let them know that I'm glad to go. Death is no dream, for in death I'm caressing you. With the last breath of my soul, I'll be blessing you. And then at the end, they added lyrics that said, dreaming, I was only dreaming. I awake and I find you asleep in the deep of my heart, dear. So
that makes it a little better if you add those lyrics at the end.
It was a dream. It was just a dream, an illusion.
Everything's fine. Go make some coffee. Yeah.
Because that one much more explicitly says, I'm gonna end my life.
Yeah, it does.
And the first one was a little bit more poetic and, you know, illusory or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna end with, now that you've heard the original lyrics, I'm going to end with an interpretation, a different interpretation, some facts and some statistics to make us all feel better about being possibly cursed by me reading that to you. So the original lyrics describe a wedding, right? And then a funeral. So it's basically like hope and then despair. You're hoping, everything's good. And then you lose all that hope.
Yeah.
And nobody in the version of that is actually dead. It's a metaphor. Come on. Nobody died. His lover didn't die. She left him. And obviously the writer can't be dead because he's writing the dang song.
That is true.
So basically what happened is he got left at the altar and he's like, oh, I'm going to die someday. And she's going to come to my funeral and she's going to know that I still love her even in death.
That's pretty romantic.
It's better than, you know, keep pursuing her. Yeah. No, just die and I'll know you love me.
I'll know. Don't worry. I'll come to your funeral.
Don't worry about it. I'll know. Okay. So, also, here's some facts for you. Some actual facts. The song was never officially banned in the United States. And the BBC did decide that the lyrics were too upsetting, but they did allow instrumental versions to be played on the radio. So it wasn't completely banned anywhere that I could tell. And we also know that correlation is not causation.
What? We should know that.
So we're going to talk about some... We should know that. So I've got some societal and statistical information. Many of these deaths occurred during the Great Depression.
Right.
Everything sucked. It's called the Great Depression. And also in Hungary, there was an increasingly alarming influence of fascism. So people were kind of like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Also, I learned that Hungary has an unusually high suicide rate, which has led some people to speculate that there might be a gene that predisposes you to suicidal behavior.
Interesting. Okay, I think I've heard of that
too. I didn't know that. I don't like it. There is also a correlation between, some people make a correlation between, like, approval of suicide or, like, you know, romanticization of it.
Yes.
Romanticizing
of it.
Sure.
Sure. I don't know.
You know what I mean. You got it. And so a correlation between that and a love of, like, darker, heavier music and the blues.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense, because darker, heavier music and the blues they're lamenting about how much life can suck.
Yeah, you might listen to more sad music if you are feeling depressed or if you are suffering from depression.
Right. Makes total sense.
It does.
But people have done some studies and have found that there is no... After they control for other things like marital status, age, education, conservatism, and church attendance, that shows there is no correlation between sad music and sad people. or, you know, not sad people, sad music and ideation. There's also something called the Werther effect, which is the name for when a spike of suicides emulating a widely publicized real or fictional suicide occur. Fictional? Am I just adding syllables into words that don't need... Fictional Fictitious. Is the word.
There you go.
Okay. All right.
I like fictional, though. I'm going to start saying that instead.
I'm adding too many syllables to all my words, I feel like. Okay. So this was named after a novel called The Sorrows of Young Werther, where the main character takes his own life. And this was written and published in 1774. And apparently there was a rash of copycat suicides after the book came out. Yeah. There was a book published in, or a study published in 2010 by Jane Perkis and Warwick Blood, which, excuse me, Warwick, you've got the coolest name I've, are you a wizard? You have to be a wizard.
Warwick Blood.
Warwick Blood. What?
It's good. Okay. I like it.
So it's great. Jane Perkis, your name is great too. Perkis is fun to say. Sorry, Jane. Okay. So this review is called Suicide and the Entertainment Media, a Critical Review. And this found that it is still unclear whether certain pieces of media or genres could consistently trigger suicidal thoughts or action. Although there are instances in which airings of particular pieces of media have been linked in spikes in suicidal behavior. So apparently there was an episode of EastEnders. Have you ever watched that? The British soap mm-hmm. opera? Another medical drama called Casualty.
Right.
I almost did it again. I almost added another syllable. And those in particular have preceded an uptick in the same methods depicted on the show. So, yeah. Seeing it, I think, is. But as far as music goes, all of the studies have failed to provide a link between a piece or a genre of music and suicide.
Maybe a visual cue is stronger.
That makes total sense to me. You know, I think this idea was also used when Satanic Panic came around and like Ozzy Osbourne was writing songs and other people were writing songs that were
about real things. Don't talk about real things. Only sing about teeny bopper puppy love, please.
Right.
So yeah, that's all my things. So what do you think? Is any of that real?
Okay. Is any of that real? Well, the facts and statistics and things you told me are real. I don't know. I mean, it probably was like, it was a popular sad song at the time. If you were already feeling that way, maybe you would listen to that song or...
Right. It resonated with you because the time you were living in made you feel like shit. So you were like, oh, this song, I feel it.
This person gets me. This song gets me. Yeah. And it is spooky to think about people being found with the sheet music in their hand. Ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah. Uh-uh.
So, yeah, I mean, that's really spooky. But I am going to go listen to the Billie Holiday version of it. I mean, I don't believe that there's an actual curse, I guess, if you're asking me. I think...
Okay, good.
There were a lot of things coinciding. Like you said, the Great Depression and... people resonating with that song. And actually, I'm reading a sex psychology book right now.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
It's very good. It's called Come As You Are. Highly recommend, nice. Actually, for anybody, really. But one of the things she talks about is that you rely on other people sometimes for survival. You learn that because you rely on a caregiver for survival when you're a baby. So as you get older,
makes total sense.
Then you end up relying a lot of times on a romantic partner, and it seems like it's for survival, like your body doesn't know the difference,
right?
And so it can feel like that's some of the worst pain in the world. If you've ever even gone through a breakup, you know this, right? So if those lyrics are resonating with you, maybe you do kind of, you're like, oh, I don't need to write any words, this person gets how I feel, and you have those lyrics with you.
Right. I mean, Laura and I were recently talking, and he told me he has a playlist for his funeral.
Oh my God.
Because every time a song feels like, okay, this is what I want people to think about, he puts it on the playlist. And I was like, okay, good to know, I guess.
Wow, sad, Lorenzo. Okay.
I know. Dark, right?
Well, and it's also just very, it's very thoughtful in a way, because then you don't have to put together a playlist. That part is done.
Also, he probably doesn't want me to. No Kate Bush at my funeral, damn it.
He's prepared for everything.
Yeah. I only have one song, I think, that I would like people to listen to when I'm dead.
Oh, what is it?
It's called Green Grass by Tom Waits.
I love that song.
It's one of my favorite songs, and it always makes me feel better. That's okay. So you have two song recommendations and a book. Get out there.
Get out there and read and listen to things. And also email us if you've had any weird stories or bathroom dreams or anything.
Oh, please. I would love to hear about people's bathroom dreams.
Let's compare bathroom dreams, shall we? Especially if Jerry Seinfeld shows up, then we need to know about it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Email us at noneofthisisrealpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, or you can DM us on Instagram while you're there looking at all the posts that we make. You can find us on TikTok.
There's great stuff on there. It's quality content.
Great stuff. Quality.
Truly. And, oh, yeah, we have a Patreon if you want to support. And if you rate and review, that is very, very helpful. It helps people find us.
Yes, yes, yes.
And if you go to Redbubble, there's merch that Sarah designed. Y'all, go get it. Get yourself.
I did. Do that. Go buy it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michaela DeLeon and Gil Davis.
For the theme song.
For our theme song. All the thanks.
All the thanks. And also, I want to remind you all that you don't have to believe any of the stuff we just said.
You really don't. But you do have to believe on yourself.
Believe all over yourself. Like you're in a weird bathroom dream in the shower.
Yeah, sure. Like that.
Sure. Why not?
Sure.
Why not? Bye.
Okay, bye. Love you.
End like that?
Oh, let's listen to it.
Yeah.